Welcome back to the Roundtable. Buddy Guy bringing us in. Thanks for that, Liz. I'm David Gustina, sitting in for Joe Donahue, and joining me for the Roundtable panel discussion. Hang on, we're missing somebody here. Nope, check. WAMC's Alan Shartok is
here. I'm here, boss.
Yes, sir. Now, of course, J.P. Miller, the publisher of the Empire Report New York, is here.
Present.
Mike Spain, associate editor of the Times Union. Well.
Remember in class when I used to say, David, if you're not here, tell me.
Or as you just said, cut his pay. Well, Mike is en route. He is stuck in, as we all know, in this part of our listening area, the deathly ride down the Northway in the morning.
You guys don't know what traffic is until you've tried the Long Island Expressway.
Well, you may have a point. However, the waiting for Mike will continue until he shows up, or he doesn't show up. I mean,
oh, he'll be here.
I hope he's not lost.
He's usually here.
He can't be lost, but the Northway is a mother. It can be tough, and it's and the Long Island Expressway at least is predictably bad, and the Northway I feel like is sometimes it's horrible, and sometimes you breeze right through, so it's hard to get a routine.
Right. I don't know why anybody would live up that way. Oh no, I do know why. Well, it's a wonderful place.
Beautiful place. Now
it's only the ride on the Northway that would bother me.
Well, assuming Mike isn't lost, that's good. But if you are going to lose something like an animal, let's say your dog, you might want to do that at Tanglewood.
This is the best story. Isn't this great? All time. I'm going to bet you that Clarence Fanto gets a Pulitzer for this one.
And more clicks on that website than ever before.
Okay, so if you haven't heard the story yet,
first
of all, go to the Berkshire Eagle this morning and read Clarence's excellent piece on it.
Or listen to our J.D. Allen report.
J.D. Allen. And so what happens is Yo-Yo Ma stands up and says at the end, I've never done this before and I'm never going to do it during the ovation. He's getting tremendous applause. He said, but my colleague, Mr. Zinman, has David Zinman, I believe it's David.
That's correct.
Lost his puppy. The puppy ran out of the house, and can anybody help find the puppy?
Carlito was lost.
And it goes out all over the place, and sure enough, heartbreaking, tears down the thing. Along comes a wonderful woman in her car, and she sees the puppy sitting in the middle of the
young woman
sitting in the middle of the street. Grabs the puppy, brings it back, and they're all reunited. Is this a great story? A Yo-Yo Ma stopping the concert to ask people to
and
help
having to say,
the
"I'm serious. Yeah. I'm not kidding about this."
Oh yeah, this is as good a human interest story as it gets in a land of Trump. For something like that to happen, just extraordinary.
The community comes together and saves Carlito.
How far away?
Oh, wasn't that right in the neighborhood where the dog, it was a little puppy, ran away.
And clearly, anguished. Anybody can put themselves into that. I know Murray got lost once but found his way back.
I'll never forget it as long as I live, and I'll encapsulate it into a thing. Roselle was in New York with a friend. And staying at the apartment she usually stays in. Murray was on a leash, but Roselle went into the supermarket, and there is the friend holding Murray on the leash. Murray freaks because his mama has gone, pulls out of the leash, turns around, runs to Broadway, knows his apartment is on the other side of the thing, runs across the traffic on Broadway, and anybody who ever knows Broadway, it's called Broadway for a reason, and right. There's terrible traffic, runs to the apartment, and the doorman lets him into the apartment.
I wonder if Marie gave him a little tip.
goes into the place, and Roselle, they're panicking. They run up the street. They're looking down the street. People are helping, and then the doorman signals, no, we've got him. That's what happened.
He beat you home.
People will do anything for their dogs, their puppies.
They certainly will. Now hold the letters. I can hear them. Dear WAMC, you should be talking about serious
Trump.
Subjects.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, things, minor league stuff compared to dogs like global warming.
Yeah, right. Well, let's start there. But before that, let me just say panel@WAMC.org. Reminder, keep your letters short. Don't include links and don't abbreviate. And please proofread your letters. We almost got caught
yesterday.
Civility
is nice.
Oh, yeah. That would be really nice, too. Yeah. And As you just mentioned, a major government report finds a drastic impact of climate change on the U.S. happening right now. I think some of the folks there are worried about the Trump administration suppressing it because they have to sign off on it before it can be released.
Well, I don't want to monopolize things around here, but this is one of the worst things I know about the Trump administration. Here comes this report. Now, it's one thing when the outside experts, the scientific community, gets together and says, look, this is real, this is happening, you're going to kill your kids and your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren. That's one thing. It's enough for me, by far. But then when the government's own people put out a report, and there it's obviously been leaked because there was a fear that it was not going to be put out there, not released, because the Trump people thought it ran counter to their narrative. That's horrible. I mean, that's really stinky. And you really wonder how anybody can call themselves the president of the United States to know that the world is in danger, that the country's in danger, that the sea levels are going up, that the icebergs are breaking off and falling into the ocean, and that we are going to say, for political reasons, we're going to cater to our so-called base and say, I'm not so sure there is such a thing as global warming. Terrible. So let's assume for a second that you knew that you didn't know if there was global warming. It would seem to me it's prudent to say, okay, but since so many people think it and since the scientific community thinks it, we have some work to do.
What I think Trump's big problem, I think, with global warming is that he believes, and his base believes, that the United States gets the brunt of the criticism and the brunt of the regulation when our global competitors like China and India are really the ones that contribute way more to global warming and to pollution than any other country. And I am surprised that they wouldn't want to put out a report. What hurt does a report have? But when I was in China a couple years ago, and in Beijing, you can't see a mile in front of your face because of the smog. And I said, well, maybe it's bad in the city. Let's go out to the Great Wall and take some pictures. And you can't even take pictures at the Great Wall because of all this smog. And it's other countries that I believe are really doing more to pollute the earth. And we've made such strides in the United States, and all the states are going to be helping to curb these emissions, whatever Trump says, for or against.
Okay, JP, let me just argue with you vigorously.
Oh boy.
Or as vigorously as I can. It doesn't really matter what anybody else is doing. We have to run our own race. We have to look at our own actions. And remember that the United States has always been among the top polluters in the world. I mean, this is, you can say, oh, look at the Chinese. They're worse than we are right now. But we were an industrialized society coming up, and we have done a lot. But then this guy becomes the president of the United States, and he threatens to reverse the good stuff that we've done. So I've never been able to accept the other guy. Look at the other guys. They're worse than we are. Therefore, we shouldn't be doing anything. And as far as the argument that the states, God bless them, are doing what they should be doing, it's not every state. And therefore, you know, these smogs and everything else, they don't have national boundary, state boundaries. They don't stop at the state level, say, okay, that this state did it, but this state didn't do it. So so that while I think what you said was, you know, reasonable, I just think it was wrong.
Hang on. Hold on. Pause 1 second, JP. We got to take a quick break. Your letters are welcome. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll wait for the fire to come from JP after this short break. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. I'm David Gustina, sitting in for Joe Donahue. Ray Graff returns tomorrow. That should be fun.
Well, it's easy for you to say.
It is easy for me to say. I won't be here. Oh. Lucky me. Hey,
no, you work very hard, David, and you know, the fact that you're doing this, too, is just incredible.
Oh, please. I'm more than glad to sit with you gentlemen. And speaking of gentlemen, one has entered the room. His name is Mike Spain. He's the associate editor of the Times Union, and he was wearing his Secret Service glasses. Okay, hello. Hey, Mike.
Right. Hey, guys. Yes, I finally made it through the traffic interstate.
I see you breathing heavy.
It was like junior high school. We all yelled, Mikey's here.
Mikey likes it. Well, we've been talking about the climate report, Mike, and the impact of that. And, of course, the President Trump, his administration needs to sign off on it for it to be released. Alan and JP kind of going back and forth on this issue. JP, we left off with a response coming from you.
Well, I don't have a great response, but what I would say is that...
Nor did you have a great argument.
What I would say is these issues of climate change have been around since the 1990s. That is now almost 30 years ago. So the factories and the infrastructure that has been built over the last 30 years in the United States has been built with a mind towards lowering emissions and lowering the carbon footprint because of impending legislation and regulation from the government. The opposite has happened in India and China, and they are polluting at a much higher rate. Their direction is going the wrong way, and our direction is going the right way, no matter whether Trump wants to put out a report or not. And go ahead.
Okay. Well, first of all, there are those who would tell you that the Chinese are far more concerned than you are letting on about this, and that they're making precipitous moves to cut down on their own emission policy. Not being a scientist or a statistician, I'm not sure that you're right, about that. Okay, but we didn't have the Trump administration all of these years. We had another administration. We have the point now where we're told that every car in America could soon be an electric car, in which case there will be no emissions from our cars. Trump didn't do that. Trump would argue, hey, you can't do this. We got to – oh, and JP, do I have to tell you about coal? Do I have to tell you he's taking federal land and saying, okay, let's open that up for dirty, putrefying coal?
I believe he calls it clean coal.
But that is horse pucky, and we all know that.
There are also environmental people that are cutting down acres and acres and thousands of acres of forest to put up solar panels. Have you read about them?
Your point is, I'm afraid, that's right. Solar panels are.
But you're going to cut down trees to put up solar panels?
You might have to. I know somebody who might have to do that at his house, who just had some people over there looking.
That's on a micro scale.
I think the broad
leveling of trees to put in solar panels, it's kind of an exchange that. I'd have to see the data on it. It just seems like there's other places you could put the solar panels, on top of parking garages or office buildings.
I've seen them in Massachusetts and medians off the highway, in open spaces.
So you're siding with him, Mike?
I'm saying, hearing of it just now, the notion of taking down a forest to put up a solar panel just seems bizarre. Am I wrong?
Yes. No. I agree that the Trump administration
should certainly.
All of a sudden,
you're a JP. All of a sudden, you're an environmentalist now.
Well, I think everybody is an environmentalist. Okay. I don't know anybody that doesn't want to see the environment in which we live able to be around for our children and grandchildren to enjoy. It's just how you get there. And the Trump administration, I think, should certainly put out the report on global warming. And I hope that it will show what great strides that we have made in that direction, because whether you're Republican or Democrat, I think most people believe that we contribute to this problem and that the problem needs to be stopped. But boy, in my opinion, the big bad culprits are India and China, and they're getting worse.
This is so Trumpian of you. You keep trying to say that we shouldn't do our job, like pulling out of the Paris Accords. We shouldn't do our job because the other guys are worse. Let's assume they are, which I'm not sure you're right about China, by the way. I think that they've really put the brakes on. But let's assume that you're right about that. That has nothing to do with what we're doing. Why is this president of the United States pulling out of the Paris Accords?
Well, Trump is a deal guy. And he says, well, look at this deal, that it's a non-binding agreement. We could enter into 50 non-binding agreements and sing kumbaya about it, but I don't think he was not a big fan of the Paris Accords.
First of all, I take great exception to that because I have always loved kumbaya. It's a great
I knew that was coming.
Yes. Did you?
And there's nothing wrong with kumbaya moments. If we had more kumbaya moments, we might be getting along better in this.
Well, it was a political
world.
Statement to pull out of the Paris Accords. It played to his base, even though, yes, you're right, it was a voluntary compliance, et cetera, but by pulling out of the Paris Accord, he really made a lot of people who supported him happy.
But isn't this all an eye from the Trump administration toward deregulation? We've seen this article in the Times about White House won't say who's on their deregulation teams. One of the agencies, the EPA, Tom Price, there was an article about how quickly he's moved to deregulate, and this seems to be a coordinated strategy.
Yeah, I think you're right onto it there, David. The you know, we talk about how Congress didn't accomplish anything. There's been no major legislation. In fact, there's enormous activity going on at the agency level where regulations are being loosened. You know, we know they're going after the grizzly bears outside of the national park, Glacier National Park, and we know that. They're now, as Alan mentioned, talking about allowing coal mining, expanding the allowance of coal mining on federal property, and shrinking the size of federal monuments so that they're not under government regulations. And those are things that are going to reverse the direction that our preservation and our conservation efforts have been going. But, you know, he's only going to be president for temporarily, and they'll probably change it back at the end of his term.
Well, maybe they could. Anyway, we have some letters. Would you like to hear
them? Sure. We got about a minute before a break. You want to get a quick one in?
I like the start of this one. Alan is right.
Ah.
But he doesn't go far enough. We've cut down smog in this country, but not CO2. They are not the same. China is producing more CO2 now, but our CO2 still dominates the globe. It hasn't gone away. JP is wrong. And three explanation marks, and that's from Daniel. Good morning, panel.
Very wrong.
Good morning, panel. The most pressing problem of our lifetime, we have to worry about our own government looking the other way. It's hard not to feel helpless. Outrage in Lakeville, Connecticut. All right. And Ted says, China is projected to be the leader in electric car production in a few years. In China and India are going in the right way.
Yes, but it's good to point out, where's the electricity going to come from to power these electric cars? Out of coal-fired plants. That's the problem.
All right. The real problem is we got to go to news and we got to use electricity to do it. We'll be back with Alan, Mike, and JP after this. All right. Love it. We're moving on this panel this morning. I'm David Gustina. Welcome to the panel. If you have just joined us, you can write in at panel@wamc.org. Our guests today, of course, our own Alan Shartok, associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain, and publisher of Empire Report New York, J.P. Miller. We've been having quite a discussion, a lot of it centering around this climate report, and we have a ton of letters that have come in, Alan.
Well, I wouldn't call them a ton of letters. I would call them, you know, some letters that came in. And you, how do you get to us? You write to us at
panel@wamc.org. Yeah. Keep it short. Proofread.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
Okay. Okay. Patricia writes, many people feel overwhelmed regarding climate change. But what most people do not realize, including Alan, how do you know what I realize? Including Alan, is that we as individuals can have a significant impact on climate change by simply changing to a whole food plant-based diet. What we eat contributes more to pollution than what we drive. See Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine website and others to verify this claim. That's not the point, Patricia. It isn't that it's one or the other. It's both. You're absolutely right. Plant-based is better than, you know, meat-based. On the other hand, what we drive also counts. Don't you see? Okay, thank you for that. Appreciate your letter.
It was a recent report. I know that Tesla was going to soon be flooding the market with over 1 million electric cars, and certainly we're seeing movement in that area as not only Tesla but other traditional car companies are trying to capitalize on that market. So maybe that's a positive sight.
Good morning, panel. Great show, as always. The good doctor oversimplified cars having zero emissions in the future. Plugging car, you've said this, Mike, plugging your car in at home instead of stopping at the gas station is trading one fossil fuel for the other. We just burn more coal to power the electric cars. Unless we continue to push green energy hand in hand with electric cars, it will be too late for our children's children. And Emery said that. And Emery, you're absolutely
great
right.
Point.
And I'm expecting, I go home now on Route 102, there's a gigantic field of the solar panels. There's one next to Guido's Marketplace in down in Great Barrington over to the flats.
And more and more homes.
And more and more homes. I'm trying to get it, but my house doesn't, you know.
You have to cut down trees, maybe?
Point in the right direction. Well, we might have to cut down trees. But, you know, I do believe that we have a lot of trees in this country now and that we're going to have a lot more. People are very concerned about planting trees. That's what I've been reading. Okay, so that's from Emery. And Joanne says, there are now solar farms, so you don't need to cut trees, or if you don't have enough sun by your house, Joanne, that's right. You can buy into a solar farm. Yeah. And panel, JP has just mentioned he doesn't know of anyone who doesn't want the environment to be clean for future generations. Is that a joke? Have you been following the Trump administration at all? The EPA is being dismantled as we speak. They want the government totally out of the environment of environmental regulation and to significantly expand consumption of fossil fuels.
But I think that's based on an incorrect belief that you can do a whole lot more polluting without ruining the environment for us, and there'll still be plenty of clean air to breathe and clean water to drink, and that's where the difference is.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well. Okay then. Denise says we shouldn't forget that after having claimed climate change is a hoax, Trump tried to force one of his golf courses in Scotland to build a wall to prevent the sea rise that was threatening to flood his golf course. Because of global warming, he seemed to acknowledge it then.
Yeah, he had to get a permit to build a seawall along his golf course in Scotland, and the application, they said it's the rising tide from global warming that's making this necessary in order to get the exemption necessary to build a wall.
I'd like to find out who gave him the money to build that golf course. Niet, forget that. Okay, Daisy said, China and India are doing so much. They are now investing in alternative energy on a large scale in response to climate because they see the environmental dangers and they see how much money they can make. By 2020 in India, all new cars will be electric. We are so behind the curve.
That's it? One more.
Okay. And Doug says, as of 2017, China is investing heavily in renewables and reducing coal usage as the U.S. alone drops out of the Paris Accord. And that's from Doug and Woodstock. And, of course, you know who one of their greatest trading partners on coal is, the Chinese, right? The North Koreans.
Mm. Yeah. Well, where do we want to go? You said Niet. You want to talk about the op-ed that was in the Times about whether the president is going to have to fire Mueller or not?
That is quite a thing. Now, I don't always have to be the first one to talk. So if somebody else wants to go first, they can. Otherwise, I'll be glad to take it.
Well, it's a growing move in Congress.
Wait.
Oh, sorry. Sorry to interrupt, Alan.
No. Go ahead, Mike.
Go ahead, Mike.
No, but there's been a growing movement, a bipartisan effort in Congress, and we've talked about it here on the roundtable, to protect Mueller, to just basically by legislation take the authority to fire the special investigator, special counsel, away so that they cannot that the president cannot just unilaterally fire him, because that is the fear, and it is a legitimate fear, because it would stop the investigation and it would take a long time to get the momentum that it now has. I think that's what you're referring to.
Well, okay. So so you have two people. I did my homework and I read somewhere in the middle of the night what was going on. The guy writes, these people write an op-ed and they say, the firing of Mueller. See, I've always been convinced that the president has to fire Mueller because I think there's too much out there and that Mueller's going to find it and that they're going to be sunk. And so, therefore, put yourself in his place. I'm not endorsing his firing Mueller by any means. I'm just simply saying he has to do it because otherwise he's toast. And therefore, he's looking for a way to do it. And that there are several theories on this. Now, a bunch of bipartisan senators put up two bills, and the point is neither of them will work. Neither of them will work. That's what the op-ed posits. There's some real trickster stuff that Trump can do. For example, since the Attorney General Sessions has removed himself from the Russian investigation, Trump could go directly to Rosenstein, the deputy who appointed Mueller, and say, fire him. Mm-hmm. And if he doesn't, find somebody else who will replace Rosenstein and put somebody else in there. Remembering that my basic position here is that Trump has to find a way to fire Mueller. And he will do it. And I think the fact that people, senators in both parties, are stepping up to the plate on this, they know full well what he has to do, and they're trying to get around that. So my sense of it is that they had, and by the way, there are real constitutional questions here. The president can fire his own cabinet.
I think it's highly likely that Trump wanted to fire Mueller and wants him out, but I believe also that a lot of Republican senators have likely made it clear to President Trump that the Republicans are not going to go along with him if he fires Mueller, and that there will likely be bipartisan support for articles of impeachment if he tries to fire him after he's fired Comey. And Trump's number one instinct, as most politicians, is self-preservation. And he may have now been convinced, you see him softening on Sessions, he may have now been convinced that actually getting rid of Mueller would not be in his interest, that he should simply let this investigation go through. Otherwise, the Republican senators are going to jump ship on him.
So let me argue this with you. What about you're Trump and you have two choices, not to fire Mueller or to fire Mueller. Okay, those are your choices. If you don't fire Mueller, he's going to get you. And if you do fire Mueller, you're going to have to put up with a lot of garbage from what you consider to be garbage from Republican senators. Articles of impeachment, of course, will come from the House of Representatives, not from the Senate. And therefore, it is most likely that his chief ally, Ryan, in the Congress is going to be loath to let that happen. People can file the charges, and they have already in bills, but they're not going to get a hearing. They're not going to get to the floor. They're not going to be investigated by the Judiciary Committee. So my sense of it is that that he will take the one place that he gets the most protection, and that's firing Mueller.
That's probably true. Firing Mueller will stop the investigation of Russian interference and links that Trump and his business has with Russia, and that will buy him time.
To interrupt for a second, it is certainly possible that somehow the Mueller data will find itself somehow in the position of the Senate and the House of Representatives investigating committees.
Right. But you yourself just said it's unlikely that Paul Ryan will allow a House Judiciary Committee or a special committee to look into all of that. Or if they do, it's all a matter of dragging it out to the 2018 elections.
Yes,
And if the Republicans survive that, okay, Trump is home free. They'll just keep suppressing it.
Yes, but
that's one theory.
Yes, but here's another theory. What if, in fact, it is so clear, and if you're watching the polls going down, no matter what the final result is, if it's 38%, 33%, the important thing is what's the movement. The movement in each of these polls is down 6-7 points. If they get into the 20s, which I've always said is the witching hour, if they get into the 20s, he is going to be in trouble, and so are the people who are going to be running for office, defending him in these congressional districts. And then they pick up the 26 seats they need, and then Ryan is out of a job as the speaker, and who cares what he says?
Yeah, I don't view Paul Ryan as a huge ally of Donald Trump. He very tepidly endorsed him
tepidly.
Right, very tepidly.
A very cool endorsement.
Right, and so Paul Ryan, like all politicians, is big on self-preservation, and he would easily throw Trump under the bus if Trump's approval rating does go down, as you predict, precipitously. And you're right, this does the big ramifications that his approval rating has going down is on 2018, and people in New York like Elise Stefanik and John Faso and John Katko and Claudia Tenney, Chris Collins. And so Republicans do not want to see – they don't want to go down with the Trump ship. Let's put it that way. No one likes him enough to go down with his ship.
But they're scared of him. I mean, they're scared of him. There was an article by our friend Jimmy Vilkind you had it on your wonderful Empire page the other day, but Jimmy Vilkind in Politico, in which somebody said they don't want to say anything bad about Andrew because they're afraid that they like their kneecaps, unquote. You know, Trump has that same kind of ability to scare people. You know, look, 75% of the Republicans are still endorsing Trump. They still are saying Trump is the right guy. Now, You can do various kinds of measurements. You can find that the enthusiasm isn't as great. He's gone down several points, but he's still got 75%. So if you're a United States senator or a member of the House of Representatives, you're worried about a primary.
I see a guy like Jeff Flake in Arizona came out against a real profile in Courage, came out against Trump, says, you know, the birther movement was wrong. It is all about reelection for every one of these guys. And if they see that going against Trump is in their interest for reelection.
Yeah, the momentum may pick up, and that may become the narrative. And who knows how that will play at reelection time. But it does seem like we're approaching a tipping point where the Republicans who control the House and the Senate are realizing they're getting to a point where they're getting everything they can out of Trump. And now he's going to shift to be a liability to them, and they'll drop him like a hot potato.
But not a liability. Not a liability if he puts up a primary opponent against them, or if somebody does.
Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, and J.P. Miller joining us on the panel this morning. That's the Roundtable panel. I'm hosting David Gastilian for Joe Donahue. You can write to us at panel@wamc.org, and we're going to go right back to your letters and emails after this. Little Mike Spain on the air harmonica there. We're listening to the Roundtable panel.
Great sounds. Great bumper music.
Yeah, Buddy Guy. WAMC.org is the website, but panel@WAMC.org is the place to write to us this morning. We've got, of course, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller from Empire Report New York, and our own Alan Chartok. And you have letters, Alan.
I do. I don't always understand them.
Well.
But I will read them because I appreciate what everybody has to say. Mike says, just a thought, but are the senators really trying to protect Mueller from being fired? Or are they trying to protect Trump from what may happen if he does fire Mueller? As always, love the show. Daily listener here. So thanks for all the hard work you put in to make it happen. Okay, so here's an interesting reaction to this letter. I agree with other panelists who have said over time, including today, I don't think anybody likes Trump. But I do think they're scared of him. And therefore, they're not trying to protect the guy. They'd like to see him go away. So that would be my instinct in how to answer this query.
JP?
I think that Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell would love President Pence. They would love it if
sure.
you could write that future for them.
Who by the way, is not
right
running.
Away.
By the way, I just thought I'd point
disgraceful.
That out.
Disgraceful.
Well, some of the I shouldn't do this, but some of the late night comedians have been hysterical. I mean, just hysterical with the people who portray, you know. Sarah Huckabee Sanders and other things. I'm not going there, so I'm not going to go there.
Perhaps more truth in those portrayals than some of the news?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, I don't think fat shaming, for example, should be part of our dialogue. I don't like it, and I reject it out of hand. Okay, so that's from Mike. Peter says... I think Trump pulled out of the Paris Accord because it was Obama who signed on to it. Same with the ACA, transgenders in the military, and anything else Obama did. Trump's goal is to erase Obama's legacy.
Mike?
I completely agree. I think that has more to do with it than anything.
It seems like just for spite on some level.
Well, and that's what the American people voted for, is they wanted a reversal. That's what.
Okay, except for one small thing, and that is the American people didn't vote for it. You know, several million more people voted for
three million.
Yeah, well, several is more than two, right?
Isn't that
right?
I think
that's accurate.
Yeah. So several million people, or three, if you want to be exact about it, voted for Hillary. So. I don't know what they voted for. They thought they were going to get a guy who was going to shake things up, but who necessarily wasn't going to take their health care away from them and do stuff like that.
You know, the CNN ran a documentary last night, a special, and it examined the question why Trump won. And there's just so many reasons why he won. I mean, there's just dozens of reasons. And it was all a perfect storm that fell into place. You know, we could name them for half an hour and we wouldn't hit all of them. But there's no one simple thing that the American electorate wanted this. They wanted this instead. It was just a combination of
Part of it was that they didn't want Hillary.
It certainly was.
And nothing establishment.
Well, right. You know, it's very interesting because there's been a huge firestorm, a debate over Nancy Pelosi now, which is Nancy Pelosi is, according to everybody I interview on the Congressional Corner, and that's a lot of people, sure. As you know, David,
yeah.
They love Nancy Pelosi.
Because they're scared, but keep going.
No, they
did
like
John
her.
Basso
scared.
Say scared. He loves
no,
Nancy Pelosi?
No, 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 scared. But I bet he does because she helps him.
She writes $500,000 checks to all those members of Congress. They're all scared. Just like you're saying, the Republicans are scared of Trump. The Democrats are scared of Pelosi. They don't love her.
See, I'm not so sure that you're right because I talk to these people, and as the old saying goes, you don't. And
take that, JP.
And one of the things
get out the gloves.
When they're talking to you off mic and stuff, there is not a hint that they don't adore this woman. They think she's been able to get the Democrats in the Congress together and to keep them together and not to let them, you know, off the hook and going off in 1,000 different directions. Nevertheless, the polling doesn't support that. The polling says the American people don't like the woman. And the woman? The woman, meaning Nancy Pelosi.
Oh, no, I think there's
you think there's a misogynist thing?
I think there's an element of that. That was one of the reasons that Hillary Clinton lost.
Some could have been.
Some people didn't like the idea of a woman as president, as much as they probably would not admit it.
Yeah,
well, potentially the next leader of the Democrats is the King of Queens, Congressman Joe Crowley of Queens. New York's own congressman, maybe the next Nancy Pelosi.
You've had that on your Empire State Report. I know that.
Yes.
I know that there's been such articles. You've printed those articles. By the way, if you haven't gone there, you really have to, folks.
EmpireReportNewYork.com.
EmpireReport.com. It really is the place to go. I do it every morning before anything else. I read that. Okay. Steve says, environmental stewardship, U.S. versus no abbreviations. China, because he had C, he had VS. Okay. China and India, don't do your part, clean it up, or vote for me because the alternative is worse. Isn't that how they tried to get us to vote for Hillary? Steve in Pittsfield. All right, no comment. Moving on. Hannah says, okay, no, Jerry says, I agree with Alan. That's good. Say all you want about China and India being worse polluters than the U.S., yet they are still in the Paris Accord and have been taking measures to reduce their pollution. I have great respect for the states that will keep it green. Pointing fingers at our peers and saying they're doing worse than us doesn't make what we're doing any more okay. It's still bad, and that's from Jerry. All right. And Assad says, I was listening in the morning and felt the panel was being rather loose with data. To those who claim that India and China are the big polluters, it helps us to look at the per capita CO2 emissions data from 2015, kilotons of CO2 per capita, USA 16.1, China 7.7, India 1.9.
What does per capita means?
Per head, per capita, per person.
Oh, so China has how many people? 1 billion people, and
oh,
we have 300 million people?
No.
So that means that they're polluting more than us.
You may draw your own conclusions.
My understanding, there wouldn't be math in this discussion, Jay.
Yeah, well, if there's math, I'm not going there. Okay, and so Marcia says, a chicken in every pot, a car in every garage, and solar cells on every roof, in capital letters. And that's from Marcia.
Except okay. For you guys who live in the you know, forest groves, you know, which get no sunlight.
Okay.
More?
Do you want more or not?
Sure.
I think... Oh, did we do these?
We might have done.
Yeah,
some.
Just a little. Yeah.
Some
we
on
did.
The bottom. There's
yeah.
Some on the bottom. That are
No. We got all of those. I think. Okay, hold on a second. Let me see.
Do some.
Okay, here's one. Yeah, you're right. Thanks, Mike.
You're welcome.
That's why you're a great associate editor of the Times Union. Nothing gets over on you. Sean says, would firing Mueller also silence or wash away any evidence of wrongdoing he had found up to that point? I think Trump is going to fire them and immediately quit the job. He just can't let investigators look into his business dealings. He can't afford that much risk. Thanks again. Thanks, WMC. Sean, I don't think so. See, I think he may fire Mueller, and it may keep the dogs away, you know, off the scent for a while. But I don't think he's going to quit right away. If he was going to quit, he'd quit now. And everything, by the way, if he quit now, everything would go away. I believe everything would go away.
You mean President Pence wouldn't have these things hanging over
him? I think everything would go away.
No, I agree. Going back to what JP said, the Republican leaders in the Congress would just love Pence to be president, and everything would go away. And even the Democrats would say nice things about him.
And one other thing. And one other thing is, they would, as I said earlier in the program, if anyone was listening, I did say that if Mueller gets fired, all of that material is somehow going to find its way to the congressional committees.
I think it's going to find its way to the Washington Post, the New York Times, Politico, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure, and they are doing everything in their power to stop the leaks. This has really gotten to be obsessional with them. You would think a guy who committed murder wasn't doing as bad as the people who were doing the leaks, which is, after all, one of the great things about the American democracy, that we have a free press like yours, Mike, or yours, Empire Page, JP, where we can read this stuff. You can't have, I've said it 1,000 times, you can't have a democracy unless you have information. You can't.
Yeah, it's good to point out, too, that a lot of, quote, leaks, unquotes, are not a violation of the law.
Yeah.
They're portrayed that way by Jeff Sessions and Trump, but they're not.
We're speaking with Mike Spain, Alan Chartok, and J.P. Miller on the Roundtable panel. I'm David Gustina, filling in for Joe Donahue, perhaps with a discussion of information. We can come back after the top of the hour and talk about why there's been so few press conferences by the President of the United States.
And doing a darn good job, David.
Well, thank you, boss. Listen, we got to take a break. We got to go do some news. Then we're back with more panel. In the meantime, write to us at panel@wamc.org. Will you please proofread, though? Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. I'm David Gustina, filling in for Joe Donahue. Ray Graff will be joining you tomorrow. And sitting with us in studio today, we have our Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, associate editor of the Times Union, and the publisher of the Empire Report New York, J.P. Miller. We've had quite an animated discussion today. We're going to continue that, but not before we hear from you. Alan, you've got some more letters.
A few more, yeah. Okay, Richard says, panel. Thank goodness for panel member JP. Alternative perspective keeps the program from becoming a liberal version of the Rush Limbaugh show. And that's from Richard.
There turned it around, JP. Just like that, JP.
You're a hero.
Thanks,
of the
Dad.
Stacy says, Alan, thank you for always correcting the phrase the American people voted for. Trump and everything he stands for, including the reversal of Obama's legacy. The American people did not vote for Trump. The Electoral College did. We must never forget that. P.S. I think it's delightful when the panel includes a few human interest stories like the one about Carlito. It brightens the day. And that's from Stacy. Thank you, Stacy. I love hearing from you. And then hi, panel. Here's somebody I really like. Alan is right.
Ah.
Okay.
I think they have figured it out, David, how to get on the air.
This is how you get it in there. Okay. One, I love the blues interludes, but I have to demand credit for the great Junior Wells playing harmonica on Buddy Guy's album. Buddy is on guitar and vocals.
Yes.
Whatever. Yeah. Two, your discussion of Trump firing Mueller left out the most potent force in current politics, public protest. Chet, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot, and I've been thinking about Brazil.
Yeah.
And Brazil, it just went too far. You know, you got something like 15%.
That's
we
right.
got 33% here approving of the president. There you got 15%. He's doing a pooch. There's no question about it. The people are getting out with pots and pans in the streets, and some of them are willing to die.
And what about his visit to New York City?
Yeah, well, that's right. So now Trump is thinking about coming to New York. You're going to see crowds like you've never seen before.
And we've seen them in the past when he's come, but as things have built up and you see the approval ratings continue to go down, we can only imagine there, even though Bill de Blasio says traffic will be fine, that there may be some tie-ups.
Okay.
Then there's the subways, but that's another
story. That's a whole other story.
Yeah. Ben de Blasio might like to have him because he can lead the protests. It would give him a national platform. It would be a good thing for de Blasio.
That's a very good point.
Raise his numbers up.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. And you don't think that Andrew would be leading the group, do you?
No, he's actually been careful not to insult the president directly. He's criticized his policies, but it's been an interesting thing to watch.
Do you think that will help?
It has been.
Yeah.
You think that'll help Andrew get more resources for New York State?
Well, we'll see.
Well, that's not much of an answer, Michael.
I was expecting more, quite frankly.
Well, I think Andrew may, or I should say Governor Cuomo may see a little niche for himself, whereas most of the Democrat Party is saying this guy's the worst thing since sliced bread. Mm-hmm. He sees a little niche for himself as saying, I'm going to cut back a little bit and I'm going to see whether I might be able to get something out of the guy before I throw him under the bus.
Well, that may be true. That may be true. And he does go back and forth between being a little bit more aggressive and less aggressive. And some people would give him credit for being prudent when it comes to delivering things for New York State. Although, you know, as the old, as Harry Truman line, I'm from Missouri, you know, prove it, show me, show me. Missouri?
And I don't think that they are friends, but I think Governor Cuomo has known Donald Trump for 40 years, I think. So I think that they have worked on different things along the way, and he may maybe fear him a little more than love him, or maybe love him a little more than fear him, but he's not ready to be the first one on the block to say this guy's got to go.
Well, he would hardly be the first one on the block, and he is in a tremendous fight with Bill de Blasio, right, who he really does seem to pick on without any kind of stopping. there are those people who think de Blasio is equally responsible. I don't think so. If you take a look at the man you call the governor and the man I call Andrew, if you take a look, and everybody else does, by the way, if you take a look at Andrew and what he does with Tom DiNapoli, a wonderful, gentle, good man, or Eric Schneiderman, or any of the
Attorney
others,
General.
as long as you are not him, I think that's the test. Andrew looks at them and says, okay, you're not me, so therefore you're bad. So, and I think that's true with de Blasio. There was no reason for this fight, except both guys may have thought that they were going to be president of the United States.
Well, it works for Cuomo, and he is an excellent, in my opinion, excellent politician, and he's good at making other politicians look stupid and goofy, and he does it to his great advantage. I marvel at his skills in doing that.
You see, I find it so reprehensible, I can't even tell you, and I think more and more people are on to him, which is why his polling numbers are sinking like a rock, because people have had enough of that kind of stuff, and they see the same bullying tactics in Trump and in Andrew. In other words, we don't like it when politicians behave this way and can't get along. So we don't, I don't think we agree, even though I read the Empire page every morning and love what you do. Okay. And Daniel says, someone made the point that electric cars are powered by coal-powered electricity. That is not true in all cases,
no,
and where
not.
It is true, it won't be the case forever. Electric cars are a major step in the right direction. We shouldn't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Well, yeah, you got, even though I think, what is solar panels responsible for, electrical production? Right. I think I read 1.2% of American electricity.
Right, but it is growing. And if you plug your car in Clifton Park, New York, let's say, Saratoga County, New York, there's a, you know, likely that most of that electricity will have been produced by hydropower, which does not pollute the atmosphere. So you're really getting a gain. But if it's in a power plant that is, if the power comes from a plant that uses coal, it does have emissions, but it doesn't have the fine particulates in the air that auto emissions have using gasoline. So the air, you're still ahead a little bit on the health and safety aspects of it if you plug it into a coal plant and drive an electric car. But, you know, it's almost a wash.
And, Michael, you're right. There's also the question of timing. Mm. In other words, when is this electricity being produced and stored? And if you're plugging the car in overnight, clearly that's better than if you're plugging it in during the high usage hours during the day, right?
And most people do charge their car overnight, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Daniel says, oh, yeah, we did, Daniel. Thank you, Dan, from Fishkill. And Laura says, if Mueller is fired by Trump, wouldn't someone just leak all the Russian probe documents and info to the press?
I think Laura's right on.
And then Trump would go down anyway. We did, Laura, I don't know if you were listening at that moment, but we have referred to that possibility several times during the show.
Well, we really appreciate you tuning into the roundtable.
Yep.
It's a panel at WAMC.org. Please keep it short and proofread. We have this story before we leave you today, and that is that President Donald Trump has held just one solo press conference since he took office 200 days ago. It's a break from past presidents, Everyone since Dwight Eisenhower held more solo press conferences than Trump by this point in their terms. Alan, we talked about this morning, but
we did.
Strategic?
Well, of course. I mean, Trump has if you put a lie detector on Trump and say, do the press hate you, he's going to say yes, he's going to get a straight line, right? I mean, no question. Does the press hate him? Probably. But are they doing the right thing by raising the right questions with him? That's the job of the press. My very good colleague Rex Smith said that on last week's Media Project. It is so. So they're going to stand up there and going to say, what about the Russians? What about Mueller? What about this and that? And he's going to interpret that as being, you know, hateful. So he doesn't want to meet the press, so to speak.
Well, the story you're referring to, I believe it was in the New York Times today. It points out that so far in his first 200 days of office, solo press conferences. That's not where he's standing next to some foreign leader and he answers one or two questions that are shouted to him from the gallery. But actual press conferences in the White House briefing room, he's had one. At this point in his presidency, George Herbert Walker Bush had 18. Lyndon Johnson had 19, and that was a little different situation. That was after he came into office following the death of President Kennedy, but he was very available to the press and answered questions. Jimmy Carter, 13. John F. Kennedy, 14. I mean, it's very clear that part of President Trump's strategy is not to engage with the press where they'll challenge him and have an equal footing with him. And yet, oddly enough, he goes and sits for these interviews with the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal where he goes on and on and on. And, it works better for him because it's not on TV cameras. It's not before the public. And the sound bites, when they're confused a little bit, don't come out that way.
I think one of the things that has to be said here is that a lot of people are looking at Trump and saying, shame, you know, you're not having more press conferences. But none of the presidents have been in love with these press conferences. None of them, except for FDR, maybe. He loved doing it. He'd sit behind that desk and he got
John F. Kennedy was said to have really mastered the art.
Because he was so bright. Many people don't remember a wonderful comedian named Vaughn Meter.
Oh, Vaughn Meter.
Yes.
Yeah. And Vaughn yes. Meter would imitate, put records out, doing press conferences, imitating JFK, and they were fabulous. Yeah. And then when JFK was gone, that was the end of Vaughn Meter, obviously.
Yeah. It was that was an album, The First Family, and it was like the hottest album to get your hands on back in 1961 and 62.
We had the era.
You're right. I mean, actually, I didn't think Kennedy was asked once at a press conference what he thought of the album, The First Family. He goes, well, I think Mr. Meter sounds more like my brother Teddy.
I think it's shameful that Trump hasn't done more press conferences. I also think it's a misguided strategy on his part where when he engages directly with the press, they're the perfect foil for him. They're going to ask him all the tough questions, and then he gets to answer. And so I think it's a misguided strategy on his part, and I think that you will likely see a press conference out of him or maybe a major television interview sometime in the next 6 weeks with the new White House chief of staff and with some changes, hopefully, in the communications team. I think you'll likely see something in that vein in the near future.
Speaking of which, here is Trump on vacation. At his New Jersey golf course, and he's been tweeting like a tweeting fool, right? So you get the question then is it because there is a physical distance between the new chief of staff and Trump, where you know Trump has been able to put the kibosh on unthought through tweets?
I wonder about the same thing. I imagine, and as most people imagine, is that the White House are just sitting there reading the tweets like all of the rest of us for the first time and not having a thought-out policy as to where that goes through. But Trump certainly believes that tweeting is his best mode of communication with the American people. It's unfiltered. There are no follow-up questions on Twitter. And
that's exactly.
And when it comes to the media, he may have a sympathetic ear with the American people, I think.
In other words, to the media, right.
When it comes to his criticism of the media, a sympathetic ear with the American people.
Yeah, they're 10% in the polls.
I mean, bullying the media and saying the media is telling fake news or out to sink his presidency, et cetera, it has been effective.
Mm. Well, my goodness gracious, we still have time. You want some more letters?
Okay, here we go. The thought of Pence being becoming president is more frightening than having Trump as president. An ultra-conservative President Pence would efficaciously effect truly harmful changes to our country through working closer with a Republican majority Congress, while Trump just talks big and alienates those he needs to get things done. And that's from Mitch in Cohoes. And Dan says, overpopulation is a greater threat than global warming. We keep hearing about global warming until nuclear weapons cleans up our global population mess. Ladies and gentlemen, it ain't one or the other. It really isn't one or the other. Okay, and that's from Dan. And Russell says, Trump lost the popular vote by just, in capital letters, just a few million. So you really can't say the country didn't vote for him. What? Okay, thank you for that. Thank you for your letters.
What do you think about that one letter about Pence?
Well, I think that's right. I think the congressional Republicans love the idea of a President Pence because he'll go along and he won't alienate three quarters of the country. I think JP, you think similarly, right?
Well, Pence is a creature of the swamp, as Trump would say, and all of those congressmen and women are also members, so they're going to have one of their own in there. They don't like to have Trump in there that is shaking things up. And one more thing on the him not winning the popular vote. It's true he didn't win the popular vote, but Democrats, if I were Democrats and I was trying to get elected, I would say, you know what? He did win. He did win Michigan and Pennsylvania. We better figure out to take some of his message that appealed to those voters and let's make it our own and really deliver on it. That's how Democrats can win and beat him in 2018 and 2020.
By the way, you're right about that. I mean, I don't think there's any question. You're right that they need a message, that they need to do it effectively. But he didn't win, and they should never say he won because he didn't win.
Well, he is the president, and we can't deny that.
I deny
Interestingly, a new poll in New Hampshire shows John Kasich is way ahead of President Trump. Mm. Yeah, so
I'd say it's fairly early, though, Mike.
I'd say so, and I hate the idea of sitting here in August of 2017 talking about the 2020 presidential election.
My thought was, if something happens with Trump, he is removed, he's out, and Pence is in, because of what's happened with Trump, does Pence have to be more bipartisan in nature?
Yeah, he will be.
And how can he'll gain everything by that.
Sure.
And the Democrats will have no choice but to praise him because he'll be such a clean figure in there. And then they'll have to deal with him the way they deal with. It'd be a very interesting thing to watch.
And there are also, of course, Republicans are going to deny that they are actively considering doing something in 2020. But with the dynamic that President Trump presents, there are certainly Republicans that are looking at how they might become president in 2020,
absolutely,
even with Trump as the incumbent because
absolutely
of his situation that he's in.
Well, that's why putting out these poll numbers with Kasich beating him decisively in New Hampshire is very important. You know, I would hate to think that newspapers or others do this thing in a strategic fashion just to make it happen. Are you following me?
Wait. Absolutely not. I'm sorry. I was playing Rex for a second.
No. But the other thing to point out is that in 2020, should he survive to that long, President Trump will be 76 years old. And who can run for president at 76 years old?
Or even run a radio station.
Whatever.
For a guy that lives
ageism.
On, you know, he lives on McDonald's French fries and Frito-Lay potato chips, and he's got more energy than anybody. He's an unbelievably energetic guy.
Is that an endorsement of that diet?
You know,
sound
that
like
how?
His doctor.
you know that how? And then who was it in the paper was severely criticized by the Tabs? De Blasio, because he takes a nap every day.
Couch.
Hey, he ain't alone in taking naps. You get up at 2 o'clock in the morning, 2:30 in the morning, 1 o'clock's about the right time to get 20 minutes of snooze.
Well, the summer of hell continues in New York City, and that is supposedly going to be solved by $1 million tax on the richest. But then you have Loda coming out from the MTA saying, I need the money now.
Well, that, by the way, Loda is in the pocket of the neo-Republican governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo. And obviously, this is a big fight that is going on to try to get de Blasio to put up some real cash right now. Loda has not been nice about de Blasio. He's an agent of Cuomo.
All right, we snuck that last one in. I'm sorry. We are out of time for the roundtable panel today. We thank you all for writing in. We encourage more at panel@wamc.org. J.P. Miller from the Empire Report, New York. Mike Spain, associate editor of the Times Union, and our own Alan Chartok with us. I'm David Gustini. You'll get Ray Graff tomorrow.
Like it or not.
Roundtable next.